This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 18th, 2010. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, writing poetry with an eraser. About 30 years ago, Ronald Johnson took a thick black marker to Paradise Lost and started crossing out some of Milton's words. The words he didn't black out became a poem, another poem, one of the first erasure poems, as they've become known. More recently, there seems to have been a surge of erasure poems. Jen Bervin erased Shakespeare's sonnets for her book, Nets. Janet Holmes deleted vast tracts of Emily Dickinson. And as Sarah Campbell explains, another notable erasure poem was written with a jar of whiteout and a paperback of Heart of Darkness.
You remember Heart of Darkness, Joseph Conrad's novella about how supposedly civilized people, a certain Mr. Kurtz in particular, become more than a little savage when they get involved in the dark business of colonization.
I let him run on, this papier-mâché Mephistopheles, and it seemed to me that if I tried, I could poke my forefinger through him and would find nothing inside but a little loose dirt, maybe.
The story's been retold a few times. Orson Welles brought it to radio, and the most famous version has to be the movie Apocalypse Now, set in Vietnam.
This is the end, beautiful friend.
Another radical, though much quieter, treatment comes from Yetta Morrison.
What I tried to do is I took darkness and I attempted sort of a linguistic excision of all things human from the text.
Morrison is being literal. She excised all things human by taking out any words that had to do with people and leaving only the words that had to do with nature.
I just wanted to see what would happen, you know, what sort of a picture could remain if we took out the human players.
What remained looks like someone went a little crazy with a bottle of whiteout. Some pages are nearly all white, with just a single word or two floating like an island. On other pages, the words that Morrison didn't erase scatter and link up in uneven rivers of text, kind of like a Charles Olson poem. Morrison is a visual artist as well as a poet, and this very visual quality is typical of erasure poems. There is usually lots of blank space to show where words have been erased altogether. So to see and to read an erasure poem is unusual. It also makes you wonder what it's like to hear one.
And I could see that the coming of that Kurtz had upset them both, not a little. He talked precipitately, and I did not try to stop him. I had my shoulders against the wreck of my steamer, hauled up on the slope like a carcass of some big river animal. The smell of mud, of primeval mud, by Jove, was in my nostrils. The high stillness of primeval
forest, shiny patches, black creek, moon spread, layer of silver, rank grass, mud, wall of matted vegetation, standing higher, river, gap.
What Morrison did with her eraser was a little like turning off the volume on all the human drama in the novella while turning up the volume on nature. Mist on the marsh. Conrad uses the wilderness, the water, the jungle, the light, to reflect whatever good or bad things his characters are up to. Morrison wanted to cut nature loose from that.
It was a giddy hypothesis, you know, and what I realized was that I was turning a book into a picture. And because I was taking out the action, I was really left with, you know, nouns and adjectives, and it became this incredibly descriptive text. Serenity became brilliant, more profound, river, reach, unruffle, bank, spread, tranquil, waterway leading, earth, stream, vivid flush, daylight. Follow the sea.
I mean, that sounds so idyllic.
Poet, critic, and poetry blogger Ron Silliman.
And yet no one really thinks of Joseph Conrad as a nature writer. He's not the Gary Snyder of his generation. And yet to come across that material in his work is really turning the work onto a particular angle that I suspect readers haven't seen before. And it's there. I mean, clearly it's there. Yetta Morrison found it. And she is able to bring it back and show it to us.
This is like what writer Guy Davenport once said about American writers. They go to familiar places and come back with a new report of the contents. Erasure poems do that. They may be stealing, but the stolen words are turned into something new. Take Janet Holmes' erasure of Emily Dickinson. Holmes used Dickinson's Civil War era poems to produce a series of dramatic monologues about the Iraq War. When you hear one of these poems, the Dickinson poems behind it are unrecognizable, though you're always looking for them.
Such and such in a sepulcher, on such a date. You try to tell the company that don't remember. It was not, it was there, was not flesh, just figures.
It's clear that there's something new going on and that what we're hearing is not necessarily Dickinson. In fact, actually, I think what Janet is trying to get to is the language of the battlefield and the soldiers themselves.
The owner pushed and waited. Conviction too easy. Did not know I saw. He looked frightened, like one in danger.
I mean, I think the hardest part in this entire process to work with is taking a poet who has a very distinct sound and come up with something that both is distinct and is not simply like listening to the original text underwater or over a bad phone connection, but has a music all of its own.
Some readers might think it's quite easy to do. You just go and you're deleting words. But you're suggesting that it's not easy.
I suspect that anybody who tries this probably starts out with one idea, and it wouldn't shock me to discover that they all go through a process of getting part of the way into it and then realizing that there are dimensions there they hadn't anticipated.
That's what happened to Morrison, literally, as she began whiting out her copy of Heart of Darkness.
You know, the books are small and cramped. You can't get them to lie flat. You know, once you erase something, that's it. You know, I couldn't go back. So I ended up doing it digitally just for that reason.
And if erasing wasn't as straightforward as she'd thought it would be, neither were some of the results, like when she came upon this phrase.
Something to the effect of white, you know, white-faced, he rose quickly from the table.
With the human part erased, it became
white rose, which is such a obviously flowery, decorative, kind of passive image, and not what I'd want to write myself. But and it was sort of deflating and at the same time really interesting.
Once again, Ron Silliman.
One of the things that I think we might see in a number of these poems, which is how these source texts reassert themselves in the process of writing, and we could call it the revenge of the text.
Or if not the revenge of the text, then at least its lingering presence. Erasure poems may look and sound really different from their sources, but it's like they contain this built-in allusion to the sonnets or novels they were pulled from. The empty spaces of an erasure poem are a lot more loaded than the blank spaces of other poems.
Which is, I think, part of the tease or mystery that invariably goes on in an erasure poem, which is a little bit like a play of burlesque or striptease in which you see and don't see the undertext at any given point.
He's right. They are a bit of a tease. You can't help but wonder about what was taken out, and you find yourself looking for what's not there. In fact, I now have this urge to go back and reread Heart of Darkness. Or maybe I'll just go watch Apocalypse Now.
That was producer Sarah Campbell. Let us know what you think of this program, where our motto is,
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from Wagner. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox.